Brian D. from Santa Maria.
Oh, California.
Thank you. My name is Brian, and I am alcoholic.
Hi, Brian.
Life is the only game in which the object of the game is to learn the rules. And as you'll find out here, it took me a long time to learn the rules. And I'd like to start off with a story. One day, a farmer's donkey fell into a well. The jackass cried for hours as the farmer tried to figure out what to do. Finally, he decided the animal was old and that the well needed to be covered up anyway. It just wasn't worth it to retrieve the donkey. He invited his neighbors to come over and help him. They each grabbed a shovel and began to shovel dirt into the well. At first, the donkey realized what was happening and cried horribly. Then, to everyone's amazement, he quieted down. A few shovels later, the farmer finally looked down the well. He was astonished at what he saw. With each shovel of dirt that hit his back, the donkey was doing something amazing. He would shake it off and take a step up. As the farmer and his neighbors continued to shovel dirt on top of the animal, he would shake it off and take a step up. Pretty soon, everyone was amazed as the donkey stepped over the edge of the well and happily trotted off. Life is going to shove dirt on you, lots of it. The trick in getting along well is to shake it off, take a step up. Each of our troubles is a stepping stone. We can get out of the deepest wells just by not stopping, never giving up. Shake it off and take a step up. Remember the five simple rules to being happy. Free your heart from hatred, forgive. Free your mind from worries, most never happened. Live simply and appreciate what you have. Give more, expect less. Now, enough of this happy crap. The donkey later came back and bit the heck out of the farmer. The gashes from the bites became severely infected. And the farmer eventually died in extreme agony from septic shock. The moral lesson for today is when you do something wrong and you try to cover your ass, it always comes back to bite you. Yeah, now, there's one other one I wanted to, before we begin.
Can you print that?
Yeah. I love AA. It as I alluded to in the beginning, it gave me some rules. There's one other little story I want to tell you. Billy Graham once told about the time in a small town when he was asked by a boy how to get to the post office. After getting directions, Mr. Graham invited him to his crusade that evening. "You can hear me telling everyone how to get to heaven," he told the boy. The boy's response, "I don't think I'll be there. You don't even know the way to the post office." Okay. I was born in Fullerton, California, and lived in June of 1945. our home was on a dairy farm in Buena Park, and it was a couple miles from Knott's Berry Farm. And later we moved to Fullerton about 1950. The move was the result of one day there was a surveyor in front of the dairy, and my father went out and asked him what he was doing. And essentially the surveyor said, well, I'm with the state of California, and that's going to be the left lane of 101, and pointed to the dairy. It's got to go. So that's when we learned that the highway was, the state of California would take the highway. And what this triggered in my family life was my mother drinking, you know, that pressure of she didn't want to be in business. And my father had to take care of this dairy farm. He was also growing beans and corn. And it was a lot of work. And so my mother was ended up doing the business, and she started drinking to relieve her the pressure. Okay, so what do we know from that? The fighting in this family started, the arguing between the parents. So, as a good child of an alcoholic, I tried to lower my head and just keep on going. And I went to grammar school at St. Mary's Grammar School in Fullerton. And I enjoyed it. And I learned something. I remember one nun, she would repeat everything four times to make sure we got it. In any event, this was about my fifth grade. My mother was released, as I know now, progressing in the disease. And so I'd ride, I'd take my bike and I'd go early to school and, you know, go to school and play and whatnot. The school was right next door to the Fullerton Boys Club, which I came to visit daily. This time, my mother's drinking had progressed to the point of two or three times a week, we kids had to find our own, fend for ourselves, you know. So I'd take enough food to stay at the boys' club and eat it until it closed at 8:30 every evening. This routine ended when I finished eighth grade and the lawsuit was settled, and providing funds for my family, that we moved up to Montecito and bought a motel. And oh my gosh, now I realize what it was a getaway, what do you call that? Of my mother to, her drinking was accelerated, so she needed to get away. And this motel, oh my gosh, it was called the Golden Windmill, and we always had a joke that it was the Golden Gin Mill for my mother, you know. And I learned how to make beds, cut the lawn, and I had to support my father with the maintenance. This was 47 units and it was old motel and everything was always breaking. So by this time I'm 15 and I go to Bishop High School, and I never wanted to leave Fullerton though, because that was the place I grew up and I loved it and I was used to it and all that. And I missed it. And so in high school at Bishop Diego, that it was Jesuits and Franciscans who taught us. And they at the prodding, I went, started with sports. I played football and basketball, and my football buddies convinced me to run for student body president, and this was an amazing thing. So we go into the gymnasium, I prepare a speech, and I get up there, and I remember listening to the candidates, and I was the last one, and my opponent, Mike, was a very good student, organized, he could speak well. He gave his pitch, and I thought to myself, I'm going to vote for him.
Whoa.
You know, needless to say, he won by a huge margin, you know. And so at when I was a junior there, we went to we play a football game over at Villanova in Ojai. And I they had a dance afterwards, and I met this girl, and little did I realize that she and I would marry years later. Upon graduating from the Bishop, I spent a couple of years at Santa Barbara City College and really enjoyed that, and then transferred up, and the only thing I was really interested in was science and math. So I went into physics, and I went to Santa Clara University, and it was a great education. I really enjoyed it. But by this time in my junior year, I got married, and somehow my wife got pregnant. And so I had to figure out how to get a job. So I thought, wow, her father was a very successful dentist and businessman, very successful businessman, and I was driving him up on the Bayshore to San Francisco one time. He came in at the airport, and he told me, we got talking about what I was going to do and all that, and he says, well, you know, every time we have a problem, we've got to call in those damn bean counters. Think about being a count. And so that's what I did. And it turned out very well. I enjoyed it. And there was always another tax return to do or a financial statement to prepare. But there, my drinking really took off. As I say, I got married in my junior year. My first wife's father was a very successful businessman, and he had business interests in New York, and he would fly back and forth. And I'd meet all these people, these fund managers, these money managers, whatever. And I remember meeting one guy. His name was Myron. And he was a principal in a very, very large brokerage house, and had made substantial money, and he was a partner in the Phoenix Suns. He had bought an interest in the Phoenix Suns. So he happened to like my sister-in-law. So I got to know him pretty good. And we would go out, and he'd say, you know, let me order the drinks for you. I know what you need, you know. And he'd say, well, you got to drink this drink or that drink or this drink. Okay, well, that, needless to say, that was not what I needed. So anyway, years later, I asked my sister-in-law, hey, whatever happened to Myron? And she said, well, Myron ended up living in a car and losing everything. He lost everything from his drinking. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'll never want to do that. And lo and behold, here's old Brian socking him down in college. And after college, you know, you get into that business routine of, you know, well, I've got to go out with these clients, you know. And That just started it, and getting worse and worse, and as we say in here, the progression of the disease. I started drinking too much, and of course that led to what I found out in the early days of my home life, that the wife and the husband start arguing. So we were divorced. I was still progressing. I finished my schooling and got my CPA license in 1974. And now this was 76, and we weren't getting along. So we decided to divorce, and that was a horribly painful experience for my two daughters. As right through the divorce, of course, I kept drinking and drinking more and more and more. So in 1978, I had gone to work for he was a real estate developer and developed restaurants, and one of the restaurants, we did a chain of seven of these large restaurants, and the partners started arguing, and I wanted to try to bring them back together. So in June of 1978, I went down to meet the two of the partners that were arguing with the other partner to see if I could help resolve the issues. That was a trip to Santa Monica, and it was a big fish restaurant. And so, of course, I had lunch, a couple of drinks, and I got to be late. It was a Friday, and I was to pick up my kids to have them for the weekend. So I left the partners and got in the car and got on, Highway 1, started up, and it was a very hot day, sun, a lot of sun. And the when I got to the couple miles out of Point Magoo, there's a big rock. I don't know if you remember on the right side there. There's a big rock, and it takes a curve. You go on a curve, and then so I got there, and I remember I was very tired, and I was sleepy, and I was driving along there, and all of a sudden, out from the side comes a car with four people in it, and it comes out, and I'm coming along here, and this is now is down to three lanes, so I thought, oh, okay, I better move over to avoid collision with this car. But when I moved over, there's a bunch of dips there. Mm-hmm. And when I moved over, I thought I was okay, but I was looking over the hood, looking over the roof of a pickup. And he and I had a head-on collision. It was about 4:30 in the afternoon, because I couldn't, the sun started blocking my vision, and I couldn't see clearly. So we had a collision, and the car just folded up, and I was imprisoned inside that car until some help came along. So, there's a shooting range there off to the side, and I remember waking up, and I could hear one of the guys from the shooting range who had run over to find out what they could do. And he said, well, the other man appears to be dead, and this guy looks like he's not going to make it. So, don't worry about it. Let's see if we can go over and help those other people. And that's all I heard, you know. And I passed out. So a couple hours later, they get me out of that. They cut me out of it. And it was very strange. The last conscious thoughts I had were of my children, asking God to take care of them and protect them. And the funny part is that after I did that, I passed out again. And when I woke up, I had no pain. I thought, this is goofy. I had no pain. So they finally get me out of the car. They take me over to St. John's Hospital there in Oxnard. And two nurses lift me up. And a doctor, I can see it, this doctor walks over, grabs a scalpel and cuts my stomach open to check my spleen, you know, to see what was going on there. So, again, I pass out, and it wasn't for another day that I really woke up, and people told me I was in surgery for five hours, and when I woke up, here was a CHP officer. They had me in this, like a tent, oxygen tent, I guess it was. And this fellow had a clipboard, and he was shaking me to get my attention. And he says, I have a statement here that your driving resulted in the death of another man. I want you to sign it because you're going to die. And so I thought, best that I not say anything and do anything. So that guy kept pestering me for about 5 minutes. And then in walked a nurse. And the nurse said, get out of here. Threw the guy out. You know, and so that was fine. So the doctor, the next day after the surgery, one or two days later, I can't remember, he came in and he says, the good news is you're alive. The bad news is you'll never walk again. And so I had known this doctor in Santa Barbara that was a very good orthopedic surgeon. So I asked my wife to contact him. And they took me up, and he fixed me up, and 6 months later, I was walking. And but that was just the beginning. It happened on June 15, 1978, 48 years ago, that accident. God willing, this October, I'll have 45 years in this wonderful program. But it started a progression in 6 years. Of first, I had to go through the criminal aspect of it. I was cited for felony manslaughter, felony drunk driving. And they had taken my blood alcohol, and it turned out to be 0.08. And at that time, 0.08 was not driving under the influence. So that was a positive for me. But I get through the criminal aspect of it, and I'll never forget the day I go for sentencing. My attorney turns to me, and just as we walk up to the railing talk to the judge, he says, the judge was cited over the weekend for drunk driving. And I thought, oh my God. I hope, you know, and I started praying. And it turned out okay. They gave me work furlough. I had to go to the airport, the Oxnard Airport down there by Port Wine, Camarillo. And, but I then got hit with the civil lawsuit from the survivors of the man that was killed. And they sued me for $2 million. Well, the insurance, my insurance was, funny how it works out. Because I took care of my parents' business for a number of years, the insurance agent put my name on as the father and gave me $1 million in insurance. You know, I never realized it until this lawsuit came along. And so for 4 or 5 years, you know, we go through this lawsuit. I mean, I had to retell that story of the accident several times. And I remember one of the last times they said, you have to go over to the DMV. I'll go over to the DMV, and this very, this fella, he says, sit down, please. And he says, you tell me what happened. Detail by detail. And he clicks a little thing to record it. Okay. And so I tell him the story and all that. So, I mean, it went on for 3 years, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So one day, it was about 1983, I get a call from, it was AAA insurance that I had, that my father had gotten and that I inherited. And the agent was all happy. I thought, oh man, what's this all about? And he says, well, the matter's been settled. I said, what? Yeah. I said, what does that mean? He said, well, it was settled for $650,000 or something like this. And I said, well, last time I talked with you, you know, you weren't very optimistic. Mm-hmm. And he says, well, no one thought to take the blood test of the other driver. They took the blood test of the other driver, and he had been drinking also. Ooh. So there's a theory in law that he can't accuse me. I was under the limit. He can't accuse me of drinking of my drinking causing, if he had been drinking. So that's what saved my bacon. So I by this time I had gotten into AA, and I had really met some wonderful people in the Santa Barbara AA that really helped me. And I mean, you know, my first sponsor was a man named John McKenna. He's dead now. He's my first sponsor. He was a real jewel. He was one of the, he had made a lot of money in the stock market, built a big building in Santa Barbara, and then lost it all because he was drinking and partying and all this. And but then I heard he got sober. So when I got sober, I thought, maybe I better go over and talk to Johnny, you know? And I went over, and he became my sponsor, and he was just absolutely beautiful to work with, and he really, really helped me. He could see that I was really stunned by this death in the auto accident, and I was really depressed and trying to figure out what I could do emotionally about that. Well, John started me through the steps, and we did a four step, and we got he said, "Would you go over and see this other man, Jim? Jim, I'm sure he's dead now, but." He said, I want you to go to lunch with him. So I called Jim and invited him to lunch. And we went out. And he says, yeah, he says, you know, I know you've been through a lot, but let me tell you what happened to me. He says, my wife and I, we had 5 kids, and we decided to go out one night drinking. And the 5 kids, we put them in bed and whatnot, and we left. A fire started, burned down the house, killed all 5 kids. And I thought, oh my God, that really, I mean, you know, put my situation in perspective. And he was a sweetheart of a man. He really helped me. And he went on to do some very good things in Santa Barbara. He became one of the financial backers of the new house. So I got through all that, and I didn't know how I was going to get through it. I just listened to my sponsor and did what he told me to do. I remember one day when I had to go to court, it was really funny. I was going to a lot of AA meetings down in Ventura and Oxnard because I had to be down, go to court and all that stuff. So one day I have to go to, into the court to see this judge and find out what would happen next in the lawsuit. And out from the judge's chambers walks this bailiff that I was with the night before at the Oxnard AA meeting. I thought, wow, that's beautiful. You know, that really put me at ease, you know, because we're all over. Let's face it, we're all over. I'm just so happy that I got into AA, you know, because so many things have happened, you know, like they say, outsiders are shocked when we burst into merriment in here, but we've been through, you know, when they hear about our tragic events that have happened to us, but we learn that, you know, we're not a glum lot. We got to go on. We got to keep going. And these principles that of AA, I mean, they're absolutely beautiful. I love steps 1, 2, and 3. That, you know, honesty, hope, and faith. I love reading about the steps. And a while back, I was reading this other book about spiritual principles, and they had this saying in there, and it's an acronym, really: trust, surrender, believe, receive. And it's a spiritual principle emphasizing faith, step 3, letting go, step 1, and openness, you know, to let go of stuff and receive the blessings of our higher power, or God as we understand him, you know, and releasing control over situations, you know. That was a big one for me, and it's just exactly what our steps are. And that's that principle: trust, surrender, believe, receive, has been around for centuries. And you know, it's, we're so grateful that the Bill picked up on them and did. I'm always amazed at reading the big book. Like, you know, they my first sponsor said, well, you got to learn how to pray. Well, I went to Galley School and all that. We got a lot of prayers, you know. But Bill's, you know, those pages 82 to 87, I think, he talks about, this was a guy that was 3 years sober when he wrote that section of the book. And he was no spiritual giant. I mean, you know, and here he puts together something that, if you read it, doesn't tell you this or that or that. He gives these beautiful suggestions, and you pick up on it, and pretty soon you're praying, and it works. It's just amazing how it works. I love the big book, and I love the the what we learn in it, you know, that one page, I've forgotten what page it is. It, you know, basically it's the law of the gift, and Malcolm Lindsay pointed it out to me. And basically the way, it's just one sentence, but what it says is the more you do the program, the more gifts you'll get. The more you'll enhance yourself, and you'll get more blessings, more blessings. I love reading this thing. I'm amazed at how this alcoholism is. I was reading is the third actual cause of death in the United States today. Yeah, that, you know, I guess people come in and what's really behind it is alcoholism, they die, you know. But AA has taught me, you know, gives me a safe place to come. You know, there's support and belonging. I belong to it. I'm amazed at how people that have my same problems. When I first came, I didn't want to talk about my problems, but other people were talking about my problems. Yeah. And it was amazing how the mastermind kind of principle works. And, you know, I'd go up to them and say, you know, I have a friend that has a similar problem. And, you know, and they say something like, yeah, I bet it's a very close friend, you know. But, you know, recovery and how it's brought my family back together. In 2019, I lost my daughter. She was 47, died from cancer. And I did not. I wish that I would have had a closer and stronger relationship with her. I pray for her each day, and that's one of the things that the discipline. I mean, my first sponsor kept telling me, "You're going to run into the big D." What's that? Discipline. You got to discipline yourself. Just do it. You know, the only bad prayer is that you didn't pray. So, and then in my parents in 2005, they passed away. And I had gotten married again up here in Santa Maria. And it was a miserable marriage. And so I had to deal with that. I started going through a divorce, and then my parents died within 90 days of each other, and father left this piece of property, and one crazy brother starts a lawsuit against us, and over, you know, arguing about money, man, this is mine, that money, you know. So what I learned was just to, you know, that saying, I think it's Carl Jung has, you know, 95% of the stuff you have in your mind doesn't happen to you, you know. So I just kept prodding along. And then my parents died, and a couple of years after that, I meet this woman in Al-Anon and AA. And she's from Mexico, and we got along very good, and it's turned out to be what a beautiful marriage it is, and because we both respect and love each other, and it's just amazing how beautiful it is. And she's so beautiful, but she calls me gorgeous, and I keep reminding her, just keep coming back, you know. But with that, I'd like to close with another couple of little things here. I remember this one because I was doing step nine when I heard this in a meeting. When it comes to step nine, making direct amends to people I'd offended, I asked my sponsor if I could just take the easy way out and send these people a letter. And he replied, "Did you offend them by letter?" And then there's this preacher, and he's completing a temperance sermon with great expression. He says, "If I had all the beer in the world, I'd take it and throw it into the river." With even greater emphasis, he said, "And if I had all the wine in the world, I'd take it and throw it in the river." And then finally he said, "And if I had all the whiskey in the world, I'd take it and throw it into the river." And then he sat down. The song leader then stood up and very cautiously and announced with a pleasant smile, "For our closing song, let us sing hymn number 365, Shall We Gather at the River?" Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you.